Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
It is Sunday, October 30th. Welcome, listeners, to the Kudzu Vibes. I'm Tim Shiflett, and you regular listeners know the drill. David, who normally takes the center chair and starts the show, is off tonight. He's in Atlanta viewing his beloved Falcons, but of course, running the board and keeping us on the air. Catherine's here. Good evening, Catherine.
Greetings from Atlanta.
And we are extremely fortunate tonight. We have not one, but two guests. And one of them, who has been with us a few times, has graciously agreed to serve as a guest host and stay with us the entire hour. I personally think he's a massive upgrade from David. And but anyway,
ouch.
From Blue Virginia, welcome back, Mr. Lowellfeld.
Well, thank you very much, and greetings from Arlington, Virginia.
Arlington, Virginia, almost within sight of our nation's capital.
Just
now,
about. If you get on a high enough point in Arlington, you can just about see. Yep.
Now, in just a few minutes, we will welcome another guest, political consultant Mike Hassinger. And while we wait for Mike, Lowell, we're going to turn our attention to you. Catherine's
I'm honored.
Just a moment, going to talk to you about the campaign in Virginia, the state of politics there and all that. But I want to ask you about a person from your state. On July 22nd, you might recall that you published an article in The Hill titled "Why Kane is the Right Choice for Clinton." You know now, along with all of us, that you have had a chance to observe Senator Kane during the course of this campaign. And David wanted me to throw in something here. He wanted me to say that he has not been particularly a huge fan of the senator during this campaign. Now, me, on the other hand, I've been a little more lenient because I think he's really helped us in the state you're in, which I'm sure you and Catherine will get to in a minute. What is your take on Tim Kaine's overall performance this fall in the campaign?
Yeah, it's interesting, David. I don't know if he feels that he wanted a more progressive running mate, but I think Kane has done everything he's been asked to do. He has been running around the country. His voice is shot just about. I mean, he's been doing multiple rallies per day in Ohio and Pennsylvania and Florida and everywhere. I think he's been a happy warrior. I think he genuinely likes getting out in front, you know, with people. And I think it kind of shows. He just did an interview with Pusha T, who I had never even heard of, which shows my taste in music, I guess, but who's a rapper. And he did great. He's just really natural with people. I think, you know, his Spanish language fluency or near fluency has been quite helpful with Latino voters. I mean, it's not like he speaks Spanish all the time, but he can speak Spanish fluently. He gave a whole speech in Spanish, actually, at one point a few weeks ago. I think he has been cool and level-headed with all the various crises that have come up, including the latest one, which I guess we'll probably get to, with the emails and the FBI and all that. Yeah, Kane is a seasoned guy. I mean, he was the Democratic National Committee chair. He's very used to going on the Sunday morning talk shows and the whatever evening talk show, any talk, you know. He's very experienced with public speaking, and You know, so I think he's been solid. I think he's been – I think he's helped in Virginia, yes. I mean, notice they have spent no resources – well, not none. They have a ground game, but they haven't advertised on the air on broadcast TV or whatever in Virginia. So they've pretty much assumed they had Virginia I mean, not just assumed. It's based on polling and everything. But for a long time now, pretty much had Virginia in the bag. And that's partly because of Kane. And then that's an important one, you know, to have in the bag. I mean, so, overall, I'm quite pleased. This is basically what I expected to see from Tim Kaine. I've been watching him for years. The only thing I'd say slightly negative is the debate, the vice presidential debate. I thought it was very weird to watch that. I've been observing him since 2005. When I started a little blog called Raising Kaine, try to help elect Tim Kaine governor of Virginia.
Oh, yeah.
And I've seen him give dozens and dozens of speeches, if not hundreds. I don't even know how many at this point. And I've talked to him in person. And, you know, I've never seen him like that, really, like he was at that debate. He seemed frenetic. He was super aggressive. He was like in prosecutor mode or whatever.
I think it was intentional. I think it was – he was aggressive because Hillary can't be.
Yeah. And Lowell – yeah. I was going to
By the end of it, I think it was a winning strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to add a little bit to what Catherine was saying. And probably here is David's criticism. He thinks that the senator – although I don't agree with this – he thinks that the senator comes across on television as bland, the word, a little bit colorless, kind of disappears during the campaign, that sort of thing, where perhaps a more flamboyant choice this year would have been better or something to that effect.
An Elizabeth Warren or something.
I've actually never seen a vice presidential candidate carry a ticket. The closest I've seen to that was 1960 when Johnson did deliver Texas to Kennedy and helped him in the South. But still, what would you say to people that would say that Senator Kaine does come across as bland?
Yeah, see, I don't see it as bland. I see him as very likable, kind of like what has he been, the joke about him being like the nation's dad or stepdad or something or other anyway. I think, you know, I think people are comfortable with him because he's comfortable with himself. And I think he's basically a good guy. I think that's what he comes across. I don't think, you know, I'm trying to think back at vice presidents, at running mates. Oh, Sarah Palin. I mean, she was flamboyant, if that's what you want. You want exciting. But I mean, Al Gore, I mean, he wasn't super... Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's what you want necessarily in a running mate. Al Gore, when Bill Clinton picked him, he wasn't super exciting or anything, right? But he, I think, gave Bill Clinton what he wanted on that ticket. I think everyone, you know, the presidential candidate has to pick a running mate based on a whole bunch of different factors. And one of the factors is, I think I wrote it in my article, was that Tim Kaine could be president. I mean, the guy has the experience. He started on the city council, then he was mayor of Richmond, then he was lieutenant governor of Virginia, governor of Virginia. He was Democratic National Committee chair. He's U.S. senator. He's on the Foreign Relations Committee. I mean, just go on and on and on. This guy is eminently qualified. If, you know, God forbid or whatever, something happened to the president, I mean, heartbeat away and all that, I mean, he could step in. So that's one of the considerations. There's always a consideration of, can the person help carry a key state? Can the person help with a key demographic, maybe? Can the person serve a particular role that he's wanted, the presidential candidate wants them to serve? So, I mean, and there are other factors, too. I mean, so I think he's done what they want. I think he did what they wanted at that debate, too. I agree with Catherine. I think it was out of character
for
him.
The other and probably most important thing is that the presidential candidate is comfortable with them and can trust them and feel confidence in them. And I think that we learned that, you know, that was really important to Secretary Clinton. And I think it's very important. And I think he's been really good, actually. I was not a fan of his. Some of his views in the past have been contrary mm-hmm. to some of mine, some very mm-hmm. important ones. But he sort of changed up a little bit on some of that, and I think he's been really strong. And I think that his debate performance, even at the beginning when I was watching it, I was like, wow, he's being kind of weird, like he doesn't seem like himself. Mm-hmm. But as the debate went on, I thought it was an effective strategy. And in the aftermath, the next day, mm-hmm. it seemed like it was successful. I saw him on TV today talking about the FBI thing, and he was mm-hmm. really great. He said, well, you know, Comey was whatever, like assistant attorney general of Virginia when he was mayor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
He said, I know mm-hmm. him. I've known him for years.
Yeah.
And I'm disappointed in this action, however you want to say it.
Right.
But then, you know, Jake Tapper had a tape of him saying that Comey was fantastic and blah, blah, blah. And and Kane said, well, he is good. He's effective, but I think he made a mistake. People make
right.
mistakes.
Well,
I think this was a mistake. He was
yeah,
really
you know,
good at sort of defending what he said.
Right.
Before and explaining why he said what he said today. So it was good. He was
So, guys, we have arrived at the conclusion that I fully expected us to arrive at about Senator Kane. That is, the three of us are right, and David was just simply wrong.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
So,
with that, he's not here to defend himself, so, you know.
Yeah, and that makes it more fun, right?
Exactly.
So,
Catherine, talk to us about Virginia politics with Laura.
So I looked at before I came on tonight, I looked at 538, and I saw that Secretary Clinton has a 90.1% chance of winning
mm-hmm.
Virginia.
mm-hmm.
So I guess is your party strong, or is that just because she's really popular? Is your party, you know, getting the vote out, and how are things going?
I think it's not the party per se. I mean, I think the demographics, we've had this discussion before, but I think the demographics of Virginia, it's been trending towards a blue state in years where you have high turnout, you know, election. In the years where you have very low turnout, it's more of a reddish state because Democratic turnout drops off disproportionately more than Republican. But so you have that. You have Tim Kaine, you know, of course, on the ticket. And then you have Trump. I mean, Trump federal workers, and there are a lot of them. There are federal contractors. There are a lot of people with, you know, families of federal workers and contractors. And there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of these people in Northern Virginia and in Virginia. I don't think they are too comfortable with Donald Trump as president. So whether or not they love – some, I'm sure, do love Hillary Clinton. Some love Tim – a lot – love Tim Kaine. And but I think and there is definitely a major ground game. There's a coordinated campaign going on in Virginia. They're not running TV ads, but I'm sure that's going well. I mean, I'm not heavily involved with that, but
do you have early voting? Do you have early voting?
Yeah, we have early voting with there are like a dozen or something, 11 or 12, I think it is, different reasons. And some of them are like just if you're going to be out of your jurisdiction that day, it doesn't say for how long. So like if I go into D.C. for 5 minutes, I guess, like, I don't know. I'm not sure, actually. But it's pretty – or if you're working out of your jurisdiction, which like my wife commutes to D.C., so she voted early. And because that's a legitimate reason to vote early. She'll be working all day in D.C. So we've had a lot more early voting. It's way up, and it's way up specifically in places like Northern Virginia, which is heavily Democratic, that's good. That's a good sign. But it's way up from previous elections. I think more and more people are realizing that they can vote early, and I think the campaign's been urging people to do that.
I think that's a strategy that the Clinton campaign is using.
Yeah, so anyway, I think, remember, Barack Obama won Virginia twice. So it's not exactly shocking if Hillary Clinton wins Virginia by 4, 5, 6 points or whatever, that would be about what Obama did. And the demographics are, if anything, every 4 years that go by, they just get more diverse, more democratic, basically, in these elections. And then I think, you know, the dislike for Trump among a lot of people. There are conservatives in this state who are not supporting Trump, definitely. Conservatives.
And how about your down ballot race? Do you have some important down ballot races that need to be, that you think will benefit from Clinton?
Yeah. I mean, we have one of the top House races in the country. It's a red to blue. They're pouring in millions of dollars into this race. Is in the 10th congressional district, which stretches from just west of Washington D.C. all the way to the West Virginia border. It's a huge district, but it's held. It's a swing district, and it's held by a woman named Barbara Comstock right now, who you might not remember. I don't know if you remember her or not, but she was one of the ones who was one of the Republican quote attack dogs, she's been called, against the Clintons. In the 90s, and I mean, she's been at this for a long time, and she was in the Bush administration. She's a hardcore Republican operative, opposition research type, but she's in Congress one term so far, not even fully one term. She was elected 2 years ago, and so we have a race with against her with a candidate, Luann Bennett, the Democratic nominee, and this is a neck and neck. As far as I could tell, the latest internal polling shows Luann Bennett up from the Bennett campaign, shows her up 4 points, and that was just about
nice.
a week and a half ago. So, I mean, and they were out this weekend, the Bennett campaign, just swarming, I mean, knocking doors all over the district. So I think that's one to keep an eye on. I mean, if we win that one or we lose that one, that's somewhat of a sign of how the night is going to go. That's a really purple district right there. So, and that would
be
obviously
in the
10. That's in the 10. Mm. Yeah, that would be a pickup. And we need districts like that if we're going to get certainly 30, which is what we need to take back the House. But even if we're going to get 20 or 15, we need districts like that one. We have to win. And they poured in a huge resources in there. So, I mean, if we don't win it, it would be really sad. It's, you know,
yeah.
a lot of resources down the tubes, I guess. But I'm fairly hopeful, though. I mean, I think Comstock's also very ambitious. So if she wins, hopefully she won't. But if she does, it's quite possible she'll run for U.S. Senate next year, when assuming Tim Kaine is vice president. That's going to be very interesting next year in Virginia.
Oh, that's going to be
pretty. Yeah. Mm. We're going to have two special elections 2 years in a row because – Kaine's term actually ends in 2018, but if he becomes vice president, next year we'll have a special election, and then in November 2018 we'll have a special election.
Well,
so
let me throw you a question right there on that while we wait for our next guest. If he does become vice president, which of course we certainly hope he does, are any names surfacing as favorites to run for that seat?
Yeah, there's one name in particular has really, I think, risen to the top. Congressman Bobby Scott from African-American, long time. He's the dean of the Democratic part of the delegation, congressional delegation here in Virginia. He's been around for a long time. He's almost 70, he's like around 70, close to 70 years old. But he's, quite, energetic and everything like that. I mean, and he's a really smart guy. He's very progressive. He's down in the Hampton Roads area, down in southeast Virginia. It looks like he's the odds-on favorite, assuming Kaine becomes vice president, to run for that, to be, the party's kind of pick for that. We'll see if anybody else runs, but I think if the party, I think if Governor McAuliffe and everybody is, like, united, okay, we want Bobby Scott, and I think Bobby Scott wants it. I think he wants to do it. It's hard to imagine that they're going to try to push him aside for someone else. I mean, there were a lot of rumors floating around, but those have mostly gone away. To anyone else besides him. So it would be a historic, you know, pick. I mean, Virginia has not had an African-American senator, certainly not since, I think, since Reconstruction or maybe ever. I'm not sure, actually. But we had a governor, Doug Wilder, and that was historic. African-American governor. Yeah. So,
And so here's what we're going to do, guys. Catherine, you keep watching the board for our next guest, and we're just going to move right on into our next topic because it's a very big topic right now in the political world, unless you've like been to Jupiter or something for the last 53-plus hours. It is the topic. So, Catherine, if he comes on, just interrupt me, and we'll go right to him. But what an eventful 53-plus hours it has been. What seemed one certain way Friday at 1 o'clock kind of feels a little different now. We don't need to recap everything that's happened. I'm sure all of our listeners know all of the available main details, at least about this letter from FBI Director Comey and the aftermath and the subsequent blowback. We are about the politics on this show, though, the horse race. So, about the numbers. This morning, Real Clear Politics average had Clinton at 45, Trump at 41.6, Johnson at 5, Stein 2.1 with 6.3%. Two other are undecided. She's lost about 2 points off of her lead in the last week or so. A brand new ABC Washington Post poll this morning, Clinton by one. That's the same poll that showed her ahead by an unrealistic 12 last week.
Right.
And the IBD TIPP poll had Clinton by two. Better news out of North Carolina, Clinton up out of the margin of error by six, and in Florida, tied.
I would
Nate
point out
Silver,
that
Nate, oh. I was going to say Nate Silver has got her at a 79% chance to win. So
right.
Go ahead, Lowell.
No, I would just point out that it's been a couple point, I guess, decline in Real Clear Politics. Huffington Post pollster average is different. It's actually better.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, most of that came before the Comey FBI news. And I also say I don't really trust those tracking polls. I mean, how can you go from 12 to 1 to, I mean, what's tomorrow?
Yeah.
Maybe 6 again or who knows? I mean, very strange. And one other thing, there's breaking news. I don't know if you know that, but the FBI has obtained a warrant to search newly discovered Clinton-related emails. That's just the headline in the Washington Post right now. So they're going to search the Huma Abedin Wiener. Can't make this stuff up.
Yeah, well,
but,
I mean, if they send a letter like that, then we're going to have to obtain a search warrant to actually see the computer. So,
right. So, anyway, that's happening as well.
Anyway, Catherine, you take the first general crack at this thing. In light of all the developments, where do you think things are standing right now and going here?
Well, I still think that Secretary Clinton is poised to win the presidency. I think it's just going to be a little tougher. We might, we probably aren't going to get the House back like we hope to. I think that's unlikely. Still pretty confident about the Senate. I think the whole thing is so ridiculous. These emails, everybody's tired of hearing about it. And the thing that is just so ironic is that it's Anthony Weiner. Of all the people that screw things up, you know, it's like, dude, it just makes me crazy.
Like,
and,
really?
And I'm a little... Exactly. Like, seriously, this is where we are. I'm a little concerned about Huma Abedin. I think Secretary Clinton is going to face a really tough decision about what to do about her role in the campaign. I think, you know, she's been with her for 20 years, but I'm not sure. I mean, I just don't know. I don't know what. I think it's going to be a tough staff decision for her. I really do. I, I, I'm I'm not going to presume to make a suggestion about what she should do, but I imagine she's really struggling with what to do next on that.
Well, yeah. Well, Lowell, honestly, though, we got to be fair. Trump was DOA Friday morning. His campaign was. Now, at least,
right,
he has a stronger closing argument.
Yeah, I think what it is that I think I wouldn't say she was coasting necessarily. I don't think you ever coast to victory on. I mean, I guess you could theoretically, but I don't think Hillary doesn't seem to ever coast. Everything seems not just her, Bill as well. Nothing's ever easy. but that gave Trump something else to talk about. The media just loves this stuff. They're like kids with like there's ice cream. Candy, you know, it's Halloween, whatever. They get all excited. Clinton, I mean, like Chris Saliza with the Washington Post is a classic. You just mentioned the words Hillary Clinton and emails, and he just goes nuts. He's just like, it's so exciting. It's like the most exciting thing in his life. I mean, think about all the things Trump has done or has been accused of doing over the years in his business with women, just on and on and on. And the things he said in this campaign about disabled people, about veterans, I mean, it's endless, Muslims, whatever. But there are emails. Oh, my God.
No.
There's so many. She didn't know how to handle her emails properly. Oh, my God. So it's
just
crazy.
Can he pull this thing off?
He's going to have to run an inside straight or whatever other metaphor you want to use. David Plouffe, who I respect a lot. I mean, you know, Barack Obama's campaign manager wrote a few hours ago on Twitter, Clinton path to 300 plus rock solid. Structure of race not affected by Comey's reckless irresponsibility. Vote and volunteer. Don't fret or wet. That's what he wrote. Like wet your bed, basically.
Yeah, he's
yeah,
big
so
on
I
the
think
bed wetting.
About, I think that there are a lot of people, and I'm pretty anxious. I mean, just the last week of the campaign, I was probably going to be no matter what. But I think he's about right on that. Trump, every time he opens his mouth, he wildly overreaches or he says something outrageous or offensive. I mean, they've got people at rallies, too. Yeah, anyway, people at his rallies shouting out anti-Semitic stuff, and he just the other day threw out an African American at his rally who said he was a supporter of Trump, and Trump called him a thug. And so Trump has an incredible ability to, screw things up in a way for his campaign. He can't stay disciplined. So
I wouldn't use that term at all with Mr. Trump.
No
discipline. Well, I mean, let's just then look at the numbers.
Yeah, look at the electoral map. That's the other thing.
I'm looking at Nate Silver's. If what he says is bearing out, and I'm using 3% as my margin of error. If anything is below 3%, no, 4%, let's make it 4. If anything's below 4% is still in place, I still show her with 272 electoral votes. I mean, she seems to have a brick wall, especially if a state like Pennsylvania holds.
Right.
She has run a small and steady lead in the state of North Carolina. Early voting numbers, by the
look
way,
good.
Look very promising in that state. Florida, Trump just, well, there's no way he wins without that. I mean, there's no reason to talk about it. So,
and
he thinks he can win without Florida. He's got a, I saw Kellyanne Conway talk about it today, and I was like, I don't even remember what she said. I'm looking at her like, you are just making this up. Like,
they just pour stuff out of
the
their hindquarters.
Coming out of your mouth, and they're not making any sense.
I actually looked at another one, Larry Sabato, who's one of these prognosticators as well. And his map also shows 272. Exact same thing, safe Democratic 183 plus likely 89. So that doesn't even. So in other words, Hillary can lose the liens D. That's Florida, North Carolina, Ohio, Arizona, and Nevada, and New Hampshire. She can lose all of those, and the toss-ups, Iowa and Utah, and still win the presidency with 272. So he has to, for Trump to win the White House, he has to win all of his liens are likely are and safe are plus the toss-ups, Utah and Iowa. Plus he has to win all the liens D, and then he has to win a few, you know, three I guess of the likely D or two to get a tie. So that's a lot. I mean, unless this email thing really, and so far I saw a tweet about a half 45 minutes ago from Public Policy Polling. They're continually polling, and they said they still have more to do, but so far at least they're not seeing a huge change from this email thing. I mean, the Washington Post also did some polling and found that. There's like a third of voters who say this makes them a less likely to vote for Hillary. But the thing is, if you read further, most of those people are Republicans. They weren't going to vote for her anyway. So I'm not convinced. Yeah. So let's see if anything else comes out or, you know, another scandal for Trump or something or some other crazy thing he does or says. So I don't know. I mean, I don't want to get overconfident, but I agree with Catherine though. The House, that this probably doesn't help matters. I mean, for the House, and then the Senate. I thought we had it, and I still think we probably do, but it's not making it any easier.
Well, let me ask that question. Does this genuinely jeopardize us winning the U.S. Senate? That because suddenly every down ballot Republican in sight in a close federal race is making this issue priority number one, front and center.
Mm-hmm. If they have time to spend to pivot.
Well,
I mean, a lot of them already have their ads and all that stuff out. Their mailers have gone out. Some of their voters have already voted. You know, it's that's the concern when things happen this late in the game is that, you know, people have already voted. I mean,
people
have voted early because of absentee voting, but now with all this early voting, I mean, there's like well over a million people have voted in Georgia.
Yeah,
and,
about 20%, I think, close to 20% have voted overall in the country.
Yeah, so a lot of people have voted. And you've got, for some of these Senate candidates, they don't have, like, endless resources to, you know, put up new ads on TV, you know, send out new mailers, make, you know, change their phone scripts, whatever it is that they're going to try to do. So I'm not sure how... I mean, it's easier for a big campaign that's got a lot of money to do that. But, like, here in Georgia, they're still running I'm back to Clinton, the Clinton ad, which is really effective with these families talking about their disabled children and then saying – it's a really good ad. Have you seen that ad, Tim?
Yeah.
Yes, I have. Very good.
It's really
good.
It's really good, and they're continuing to play that, and I think that's a really effective ad. There's like ordinary families – and they say, when I heard him – and then they show that clip of Trump imitating that reporter. It's very effective. And so I think
– If you go back to
the important thing for Clinton to do is to keep on her messages and not slip back and try to be completely on the defensive. She needs to continue to talk about herself and talk about, you know, what her vision for the country, I think – that's why I think it's good that, like, Tim Kaine and other people have been on as her surrogate talking about the Comey thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at this rate state by state for the Senate, I still think Democrats pick up Illinois. I mean, actually, the other day, Mark Kirk, who's the incumbent there, the Republican, said the most outrageous thing in the debate about Tammy Duckworth was talking about her service to our country. She lost both her legs in war in Iraq, and he said, "Oh, I, you know, I actually had almost forgotten that your mother, or parents came from Thailand or what." I was like, "What?" And so then the Human Rights Campaign, which for some bizarre reason had endorsed Kirk, withdrew actually today, pulled its endorsement of Kirk.
Did they finally withdraw because they said they weren't going to?
Yeah, they did. That's just crazy. Anyway, so we're going to pick up Illinois. We should pick up Wisconsin. We should hold Nevada. So that's two pickups there. Now, North Carolina, there's a lot of voting there already. So that's well underway. That's going to be close. I think Deborah Ross certainly has a shot there. Pennsylvania looks pretty good with Katie McGinty and Pat Toomey. I still think that looks pretty good there. Missouri, Jason Kander has been an incredibly impressive. Did you see his ad where he blindfolded? He blind because this guy was in the special forces or whatever he was in.
Yeah.
I mean, he's able to blindfolded assemble a gun. I mean, a military.
Oh,
you
yeah,
know.
I did see that.
Anyway, he could win. New Hampshire,
that's
Maggie
Hatton.
That's
the best political ad this year, I think, nationally, don't you?
That for a Senate race, it was just a great ad. Yeah, it was a fantastic ad. So that's another one we could win. We could certainly win New Hampshire with Maggie Hassan versus Kelly Ayotte. That's going to be very close. And then Indiana, Evan Bayh, I think definitely can win. So we have a lot in Nevada. We have to hold on. Catherine Cortez Masto looks pretty good right now. I think we lost Florida, unfortunately, to Rubio. Ugh. But. But that's enough. That's way more than I just named. Far more than enough.
Yeah, and you didn't even name Pennsylvania. What do you think
I
about
did.
It?
Yeah, McGinty over Toomey. I think I got that. I didn't mention Georgia, sadly, but that 538 gives 538 gives Barksdale a 1.6% chance. So.
We trust me on this, Lowell. We have waxed poetic about that Senate race or lack of one on many occasions here. We, you know, also had Mr. Barksdale as a guest on here, and he was a good guest, but. The campaign just...
Oh, you're so kind.
Let's just say it.
You're so kind.
Just say the campaign has not unfolded quite as well as we had hoped it would. And there's been some folks talking about, you know, if we'd run a different candidate and all that. And I'm not sure Georgia is quite there yet. I still think Donald Trump wins this state by, 3 points.
Mm-hmm.
We're like... What do you think, Catherine? Are we like Virginia and North Carolina, say, 10 years ago? Is that a good way to describe it?
I don't know if it's quite that long, but I don't. I think it would be great, and I am optimistic and hopeful that Secretary Clinton wins Georgia. But you know me, I'm in Georgia. I'm more concerned about the down ballot races, and I'm so pleased that President Obama endorsed 10 of our down ballot candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard today that he's doing, for at least one candidate, he's doing two robocalls.
Wow.
So
wow.
I'm really pleased about that. And yeah, I guess that's, you know, he endorsed 150 state races and he did 10 in Georgia. And I guess maybe that's part of the deal is that he does these robocalls. Anyway, I would love it if Hillary won Georgia. I mean, it would make me so happy. But it doesn't really, you know, people say, oh, we're going to turn Georgia blue. Well, her winning in 2016 in the general presidential election doesn't turn Georgia blue. It just means that she won. We still have a lot of work to do. And you know, we have a lot of work to do, and we're doing it. It's just not sure this is the year. We'll see.
Lowell. Lowell, let me ask you, you're looking at us from Virginia, and I know you look at a state like ours a lot for the changes. Do you see us as Virginia was when it started its transformation into at least a purple/blue state?
I mean, I'm not sure Georgia has some similarities with Virginia in terms of demographics, large African-American population, growing Latino population, you know, growing diversity in general, I guess decreasing percentage of white voters. You know, I'm not sure Georgia has the federal type workforce and military and a lot of the things we have here in Virginia and proximity to Washington, D.C. I mean, I guess North Carolina has their, you know, technology corridor, and they've got I think college educated whites is the other part of the the Obama coalition is, of course, African Americans, Latinos, Asian Americans, and college educated whites and women. So, you know, I don't know the exact demographics of Georgia in terms of college educated. Virginia, especially Northern Virginia, but also Hampton Roads and some other parts of Virginia have a high percentage of college educated people. I mean, Northern Virginia is just a bunch of, you know, lawyers and doctors and, you know, a lot of very well educated economists and all kinds of people with master's degrees and advanced degrees, you know. So that's what I'm not sure about. You guys could tell
me. Well, we have a lot of that. I mean, we have a lot of banks, we have a lot of lawyers, we have a lot of, you know, we have three large universities in close proximity,
right,
to, you know, two large universities in Atlanta and then University of Georgia not too far away. And we have a lot of, there's a lot of business, a lot of, you know, with Georgia Tech, it draws a lot of technology startups. So there's a lot of college-educated whites in Atlanta and suburban Atlanta and ex-urban Atlanta. Because, you know, Atlanta goes all the way to the Tennessee border. There's
so
a lot.
So we have, you know, I guess in Virginia.
I think they tend to be a little more conservative, though. That's
right.
My take. What do you think, Tim?
I agree with you, especially in the donut counties and the suburbs around Atlanta. You still find them. It's a transformation, I tell you, Lowell. When you go into Fulton County, the Trump-Pence signs suddenly turn into Clinton-Kane signs everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Fulton County, where Atlanta is, county of 900,000 people. And what would you think, Catherine? 65-70% of the vote there will go for the Democrat in any race, right?
Yeah, something like that. But the stronger Democratic county is DeKalb. It was in the top 10 Obama counties in the country in 2008.
That's another thing, Lowell, that's making these races closer. Those donut counties that I mentioned a minute ago are starting to slowly trend our way. A couple of them, like DeKalb, have just turned totally blue.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's what
seems to be moving outward.
Right, and that's what we had happen in Virginia, where you had a place like Fairfax County, which is 1.1 or 1.2 million people. It's about a seventh of the state population right there. Really changed over the last 20 years from reddish to blue, just like solid blue now. Also, Loudoun County has been moving more blue. They have an African-American Democrat now who's the chairman of the board in Loudoun County. You have, and that's an exurb, sort of an outer suburb / exurb of Washington, D.C. And Prince William County, another one, which is this outer suburb, exurb, you know, I guess the donut or whatever you're calling them, you know, the different terms for these things. But Prince William County is now majority-minority, and it went heavily for Barack Obama. So you have that, and then you have some of the Richmond suburbs as well changing, and some of the areas down in southeast Virginia. Now, southwest Virginia used to be coal mining, like union people, who voted Democratic, just like West Virginia. They've all gone hard, you know, Republican. I mean, at this point, they went the other way. But their population hasn't been increasing. That's the thing. I mean, where the population growth has been in Virginia is in the urban, suburban areas, D.C. suburbs, Richmond suburbs, Hampton Roads, not in southwest Virginia, in the rural and in the whole Shenandoah and the western part of Virginia. It's beautiful out there, but it's very rural. And, you know, there's not necessarily a lot of economic opportunity, so the population hasn't been growing there. So is that happening in Georgia is the question, the similar type. If that's the type of thing that's happening, then I think it would continue to, plus the demographic changes and everything, then that's the pattern. that's sort of, you know, that's basically kind of the pattern of what happened in Virginia.
We have seen one interesting thing, not an explosion of Hispanic voters, but the African American voters in every election have been moving up a percent or two. Till this year, we're very hopeful that perhaps as much as a third of the total vote in Georgia will be African American. It gets us to the point. If you see on election night that Hillary Clinton won 25% of the white vote in this state, then she probably won the state or is too close to call. That's where we're at in Georgia right now. Unfortunately, especially in midterms, our statewide candidates have been running at about 20%.
Right. The midterms are a big problem.
If the voters in Atlanta and Fulton and DeKalb and Clayton and Cobb County, if all the Democrats voted in those three or four metro Atlanta counties, we could carry the state. If we just could get the vote out in those four counties. And, you know,
that's the challenge across the country, I think, pretty much for Democrats.
Yeah.
But in the midterm elections, in the presidential, there still are huge – it's amazing to me, even in a presidential election, how many people still don't vote. There are tens of millions of people who don't vote even in a presidential election. And I think those are – if they did vote, I think they tend pretty heavily Democratic, actually, which means that – that hurts us a lot. So, generally speaking, Republicans tend to turn out more. They have more propensity to vote than, and it's very unfortunate. But some of it's because we have. I mean, like in Virginia, we've had a very large increase in Latino population, and some of these are new citizens. They're not necessarily familiar with our system yet, or super familiar with voting here and all that, and there's language issues maybe. You know, anyway, it takes a while. I mean, Texas is majority-minority state population, but it's not – well, although actually, I maybe shouldn't just say that. I was going to say it's not going, you know, for Hillary Clinton, or it hasn't gone blue, but actually right now it looks like the polls are fairly close in Texas. So this is a part of it too, is organizing people, getting them registered. Okay, if you've got the population – you've still got to get them activated. You've got to register them to vote.
Well,
and
one of the things that's going on in Georgia that's really amazing is the League of Women Voters and a couple other nonpartisan C3 organizations are going to the citizenship swearing-in ceremony and registering voters as they leave the ceremony. And
great.
I volunteered to do it one day, and it was one of the most exciting things I've ever done. It was so cool to see all, I mean, and they were just dying to register to vote. They were lined up and they were excited. And, you know, we told them how, you know, we gave them all the instructions. We got them registered. Told them how the process worked, you know, blah, blah. It was really exciting. And they've registered thousands of people. They had, you know, spent all this time and probably money to become citizens. And now they get to vote. And it was really exciting. I think it's a great program. And I wish everybody would do it in every state. It could be a really effective way to get people engaged.
Yeah, I just going to say another thing that I think it's important to raise. It's a little bit darker. It's not the most pleasant topic. I guess we're coming up to Halloween. A lot of these, not just southern states, but you're seeing it in some northern states too. There are active voter suppression, really. Let's call it what it is.
Oh, yeah.
Efforts going on. So that's another thing we have to fight against. I mean, we have translating the population of the state, whatever the demographics are, into actual voters at the polls for Democrats is not. There are a lot of obstacles. In Virginia, we have voter ID. There are various things you can present for a voter, you know, to be able to vote. But, like, you know, not everybody has a driver's license for a variety of reasons. It's not nefarious or anything. It's just some people. And then you also have an issue of ex-felons. This has been a huge controversy in Virginia. And this is fairly common in the South, or at least it used to be. It's maybe becoming less, you know, becoming less so, but where you know, these people were permanently disenfranchised. And to be a felon, it's not like you robbed a bank or you murdered. You might have. There are some of those, violent felons and whatever. But the vast majority of felons are like drug crimes and, you know, nonviolent things. You just get a felony. And then you can't vote. Like, it's crazy. And so you have hundreds of thousands of people.
Well, you can vote. In some states, you like in Georgia, once you've, you know, finished your whatever your obligations
sentence.
Were. So if you, you know, you finished your sentence, and if you're on probation, you finish your probation, all that's done, then you can register to vote. But they don't know that. And no one talks.
That's another thing.
Like, there's no – there's a couple programs in Georgia for but it's also hard to find them.
Right. So let me. That's so. Anyway, there are other obstacles.
Our whole voter registration system is really great. I mean, you know, there's all these ways of you know taking people off the rolls because they moved. You know, I mean, when I moved from Michigan to Georgia, I registered to vote and got my new driver's license. I never notified the secretary or the voter elections office in my home county that I had moved. And it never even occurred to me in Michigan. But apparently I'm probably, you know, I was probably on the rolls there for years. I probably could have gone back and voted if I wanted to, you know, but so there's a lot of problems with our voting, with our election system, our voting system.
Right.
Yeah.
So making it harder for people to register, making it harder for people every step of the way, even once you're registered, to be able to actually vote, you have to know where your polling place is. That could change. You have to have an ID. That those laws change. They could change at any time. Now that ID doesn't. You can't use that one, or you can, or you whatever. And it's very confusing.
Yeah.
And you know, like if you're a new citizen and you're maybe learning English and you're just not familiar. I mean, even if you're not. You don't follow this stuff every day.
I mean,
day.
Even if you're just you're a working mother and you've got like a spare 15 minutes and you need you want to vote and then you're like, oh, I got to go here. I need this. I didn't get that. I mean, you're right. It makes it,
right. So,
evil people
like we've had,
who want to,
we've had this huge battle in Virginia over this. Terry McAuliffe tried to reinstate all ex-felons in one fell swoop.
I saw that.
And Republicans fought back. They won a case in the Supreme Court. So now McAuliffe's having to go back and do it kind of one at a time, I guess, with an auto pen or some ridiculous. It's crazy. But I mean, he's working to reinstate as many of these people as, and there are hundreds of thousands. And so anyway, I just wanted to raise that because that's been a huge issue here. It's an issue throughout the country. It's an issue.
Yeah.
And voter suppression, Republicans, there's no question about it. There's no voter. There's no significant voter fraud. Their excuse. So
let me interject myself here for a minute, folks, because we are under 7 minutes left in the show, and I needed to take care of a little housekeeping. Mike, if you're listening, buddy, we don't know what happened, but we're sorry you weren't with us, and we'll be sure to have you on again soon. That's one of the dangers of live radio, that sometimes things like this happen. Catherine, you remember the night that I was running the board and got on the air, and 7 o'clock came, and it was me. things like that happens sometime, but... Lowell, before you leave us, I wanted to put you on the spot for a moment, since we won't hear from you until after the election again.
Uh-huh.
We want you to tell us what you think Virginia will look like after the votes are counted on November the 8th. Please feel free to give a percentage.
I would say... I think Hillary's gonna win Virginia, definitely. I think she's gonna win it by something like 50. She's gonna come close, hopefully, to around 50 to Trump in the low 40s, maybe 43. So like maybe something like that, and then scattered for the other two. I don't think McMullen or Stein have any significant support in Virginia particularly. But maybe they'll combine for 6 or 7 Yeah, 50 to 43 to 7% for the other two, mm-hmm. like maybe 4, 5, and 2, or 6 and 1, or something like that. Or actually, there's two. Well, no, there's Gary Johnson as well. So between those three, I mean.
Your polls close at 7 o'clock. What time will they call this thing?
Well, I mean, you know, the first results won't start trickling in. It usually takes like a half hour, 40 mm-hmm. minutes for results to start trickling in. A lot of times they start coming in from the rural areas of the state, which are the redder areas. This happens, and I've seen this over and over again. And people are like, oh, my God, we're losing Virginia. No. I mean, the blue areas haven't reported at all. Like, Fairfax is always really slow for some reason. Arlington's very slow to report. And Richmond City is very slow to report, which are core mm-hmm. huge Democratic areas. So I don't know when they're going to call it. I mean, like, it depends how aggressive the networks. And there'll be other people like the Nate Silvers of the world and the, you know, New York Times. They have
right.
their upshot and everything. I mean, people could call. They can do whatever they want. But I don't know when, like, AP is going to call it or I just don't know how cautious they're going to be about it. But I think you know, they're going to have exit polls, I'm sure. There's early voting, which is indicative of where people are voting and how many, you know, in heavily Democratic areas or heavily Republican. So I think we'll probably know pretty quickly, but whether it's called or not, I'm not sure how that's going to work, exactly how aggressive the networks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm still old enough to remember when Florida was called for Al Gore.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so.
Oh,
and then it was
yeah.
uncalled for Al Gore.
And in an effort to, I don't know what, I watched Recount the other night. And then last night I watched Game Change. And I watched, that's all about Sarah Palin. And I was like, oh, my God, we thought this was so horrific 8 years ago, and look where how far we've come down now.
Yeah, really.
With Donald Trump. It was pretty shocking.
I'm
actually
the for Sarah after seeing him. Just to be honest with you, that's bad to say, but that's the truth of the matter. And if y'all, by the way, another little piece of housekeeping. If y'all heard a bunch of dings earlier, that was people feeling the need to electronically high-five me that are at the Falcons game. Just so I mentioned that.
I thought it was babies. Maybe they
anyway,
are babies. At the well,
yeah.
Anyway.
anyway, Lowell, another thing we want you to do before you go, We do get a lot of new listeners from time to time since we have quite a crowd of listeners and we're on a couple of new networks. And
cool.
If there are some people out there that have not heard Lowell Fail before and want to read or see more about him, why don't you tell them where they can do that?
Yeah, my blog is named Blue Virginia, and the URL is bluevirginia.us. And you know, there's also a Twitter feed, which if you go to the blog, you can see. You can sign up for Twitter and follow on Facebook and everything. But if you're on either of those, which most people these days seem to be, at least on Facebook. So anyway, you know, if you're interested in Virginia politics, we also cover some national politics as well. We're right next to the Washington, D.C. here, so it's kind of hard to avoid, even if we wanted to, which we don't. But just assume we did, but we don't.
Yeah, so the old clock on the wall is telling me that we're just about out of time for tonight. And, Lowell, we certainly appreciate you stepping up and being a good trooper and
sure.
staying with us for the whole hour tonight and giving us a lot of good feedback, especially on Tim Kaine. And remember, we were all right and David was all wrong. That's
exactly.
the main thing we take away from this show. And after
and,
this
good
thing,
luck in Georgia
you
know, on election
so
night. Yep.
Yeah. After
all
this
right.
thing's
Thank
over, we figure out what all happened. We hope you'll come back and talk to us about all of it. So with that,
okay.
Next week, folks, tune in and you'll hear Catherine and I'm sure David will make us give our predictions for the election.
Oh, yeah,
so,
sure. Yeah, he always does.
So we'll see you next week on the Kudzu Vine. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Good night.